Ladies and gentlemen, Zebra Stripes Podcast, Season 2, Episode 2. I am Coach Gene Clemens, and this is Coach Witt Lejeune. Coach Witt, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well on this dreary Monday in Maine. Went into work today after watching some video and whatnot with my guys in the preseason at 7:30. And, you know, got into the office and go, God, I feel like I'm dragging. And the academic dean came in the door and said, you know, when it's raining on Monday morning, we ought to all take the day off. I said, God damn, that sounds like a good idea to me.
Like a genius right there. Sounds like a man I want to follow. That's for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. It was a rough Monday. I don't know why, but I always have rough Mondays because my transition back into work week mode hits that snafu on Sunday nights. Like, you know, I can't go to sleep because I'm still kind of in weekend mode. I'm trying to get stuff. I'm trying to finish out and enjoy the rest of the weekend while also trying to get ready for the Monday. And then all of a sudden I look up and it's 2:30 a.m. And, you know, I'm up and wired. And I'm like, I've got to be up at 6 o'clock. This isn't going to be good. You know, and I more often than not, that's how my Sunday goes. And I outside of just like mandating, I do nothing on Sunday. I don't really know how to reel that back in. So I hear you. It wasn't a dreary day down here, by the way, for the record. It was beautiful.
Was or it wasn't?
Okay. It was fantastic.
The cold snap is over.
I mean, the cold snap did what it was supposed to do. It was supposed to drop us down to temperatures that we like this time of year, which is 70s and sunny. And like, it's California now. It went from being, you know, the South to California, which I'm down for all of that. Sand gnats are really awful this year, though. I mean, legit, like, just eat your face off bad. But other than that, I'll take some sand gnats, you know, to get this weather. That we've had lately. You know who's probably looking for some sand gnats right now is Bailey Zappe, trying to figure out what he's got to do to, you know, keep this gig. He's been fantastic. Well, let me rewind that. I don't want to go hyperbole this early. We're not even 5 minutes in. He's been good. He's been good in place of Daniel Jones. And I am surprised. For those who are listening, you're listening to this. We are heading into Monday Night Football with the Patriots and the – who are they playing tonight with?
Bears.
The Bears. That's right.
The Bears.
Yep. Gotta love an old SNL skit, right?
That's it.
The Bears and the Patriots are playing, and – I just thought because it seemed to be in a Belichick nature to roll with the hot hand. And I'm surprised they're not rolling with Bailey Zappe right here. Are you surprised?
Yeah, I mean, I am surprised. I'm not shocked. I'm surprised. I'm more as a fan, as a complete fan, not even as a Zebra Stripes podcast co-host, as a fan. I'm kind of bummed out. I've lost some enthusiasm for the game. I had a lot more enthusiasm going into the game, wanting to see if Zappe fever could, you know, roll again and this and that. So, hey, look it. I'm as the coaching side of me. I'm a team guy, so I hope the Pats look good. I hope they take care of business. But I know it's the NFL. Belichick always says wins are hard to come by. So. You know what? I hope the Bears don't. Back to a media co-host side of me. Yeah, I hope Mac Jones lays an egg, and then we can get on here and, you know, maybe question it. But I'm surprised. Back to your point. So I'm surprised, but as a fan, kind of disappointed because I wanted to see what the kid could keep doing.
So here's something that, and I don't know if you've recognized this. This may be the chink in the Belichick armor. Like if there's a chink in the armor, it may be here. You remember way back when, you know, in the earlier days of Tom Brady, before, like, he had won a Super Bowl, but a lot of people were saying that he was just kind of along for the ride on those Super Bowls early on. And they drafted Michael Bishop. And I remember that preseason, Michael Bishop lit the world on fire. That dude looked like Michael Vick 2.0 out there running around, throwing the ball, completing. Like, he looked great. And they cut him. And I was like, wow. Like, I didn't see that coming. Like, why would they cut him? He's clearly a good enough guy to be on this roster. I remember they drafted Bruce Eugene out of Grambling. And Bruce Eugene had a really good preseason. And they cut him. And so here's my theory to you. Maybe Belichick knows that if he leaves Zappe in there, he's going to cause a quarterback controversy. So why not get him out right now before there's ever, like, people are going to be like, oh, well, you could have gave Zappe another shot. But before there's real legitimate hype to say, we've got to keep this dude on the field, because this ain't a Dak Prescott, you know, Cooper Rush situation where, you know, Cooper Rush has been around and we kind of know what Cooper Rush is, and we can see the difference in the offense and how they do things with Cooper Rush versus how they do things with Dak. Zappy's out there doing the exact same stuff Daniel Jones. I mean, not Daniel Jones, but Mac Jones has been doing. So do you think it's maybe strategic on Belichick's part to protect the investment that they made in Mac Jones?
Absolutely no idea, but could be, and certainly doesn't, you know, want the controversy. You know, if Jones goes out and throws for 250 plus and a couple touchdowns and it's all smooth, no awful picks, Patriots roll, the Zappe era for now is over. Like, its story is over. But should, you know, Mac go out and look something less than you know, what we've been seeing the last 2 weeks, then, you know, I think it actually comes back more. You know, I think it blows back heavier that way. So, hey, look, a lot of players were coming out in support of Mac this week, and, you know, what, you know, who knows? We'll wait and see. I'm, you know, back to your original question. I'm a little surprised now I think Mac's performance will be under the microscope. Now the real comparison will start between what he does and what Zappe has been doing. So I'm just, yeah, like I said, I, you know, I'm speaking strictly as a fan, wanted Zappe in there.
Yeah, I find it interesting because it just seems as if in Belichick's past, he's done this. He's had guys who have performed well as backups come in, and then as soon as the starter's ready, he's gone back to the starter and pretty much gotten rid of the backups. Or anytime there's a backup that performs well, gets rid of the backup. Like, maybe that's the one place that he's not willing to go next man up. That he's not willing to just say, hey, whoever's the hot hand, I'm going to ride it. That's the one that he feels like he needs stability.
Yeah, I think that's another good point. You're probably right. But, and obviously for listeners that are out there at our age, the only exception to that rule that's obvious, of course, is when he did not do that, saying he did not give Drew Bledsoe the same opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that, you know, that means, okay, he's the one looking at practice and who gives us the best chance to win. And, you know, so you got to say, okay, he believes Mac Jones gives him the best chance to win.
Yeah. I mean, I think though, like at that time, him still being pretty new to the gig was probably a lot more willing to, you know, shake the tree a little bit, as opposed to him now 30 years. Well, I don't know. It feels like 30 years.
It does.
20 something years in now. Yeah. He's Jesus. Like, we know more of Belichick as the head football coach of the New England Patriots than we know of him not being the New England Patriots head coach.
Yeah, and if we stick with the theme, you know, hopefully his decision is right, because if it's right, then he gains more ground this week on the Belichick versus Brady, since Brady, they went out and laid another egg.
Yeah. It's interesting, too. Does this now end up being a situation where Bailey Zappe gets flipped into a second-round draft pick or a first-round draft pick? Because that seems to be what happens with these Belichick backups. Like, they're able to get them cheap, show that they can play, and then sell them off to somebody desperate for a quarterback, you know, somewhere else.
That actually crossed my mind more than the I don't want the controversy. I said, okay, he's going to put Mac Jones back in, and he's going to take Zappe, who's been hot, and he's going to just put him on ice and say, oh, no, hey, you guys saw what he could do. Like, yeah, he's a good quarterback, and turn him into an asset. That did, you know, strike me as plausible.
That would be Belichickian. That would be the way, the Patriot way. I don't know. I'm really. It took a lot of the luster off of this game for me, because I thought it was going to kind of be a dog game anyway.
Yep.
Monday night, the Patriots aren't lighting it up offensively. They don't. You know, the Bears aren't lighting it up. I don't think I'm going to lose out on some sleep because of this matchup. But I hope I'm wrong. I hope they come out guns blazing, and it's, you know, it's one of those where it kind of sneaks up on you and takes you by surprise. But I just don't feel like it's going to be. That's not what either of these teams have shown this year to just be, you know, dynamic.
No, so it's a Monday night game in major markets, but with two, you know, middling teams.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even two middling teams. Right.
Like, they're not constructed to be dynamic. Like, this isn't a team constructed like Kansas City. These are teams constructed to, like, kind of like the Giants. Speaking of the Giants are 6-1. Did you know that?
I did know that, because every time I look and they're within, you know, a touchdown or even maybe up, you know, 9 points late, I go, oh, they're going to win. And one of my friends here at the school is a big Giants fan. And I used to be growing up, you know, the NFL was built on, in part, the Giants, you know, CBS Sports back in the day. One of the greatest theme songs pre-game going, their introduction on TV. But so I just said, yeah, they're going to win. There they go again. And I saw them, I think, with the ball driving late, and I'm assuming it was the go-ahead touchdown, but I said, oh yeah, they're going to go in. They're going to win again. So I've been paying attention to the New York Football Giants, and it's a great story, but I think, you know, putting the coach hat on again a little bit, or the fan hat, it's the better story is just how they're doing it, you know. Kind of, I think they got a little cardiac kids thing going on.
Yeah, I think this could.
Let me back up. Cardiac kids with number 26, Saquon Barkley, in the backfield. So they're not all cardiac kids.
Yeah, it's like, no.
Sorry.
If he went on the market, it would be a mad dash to try to grab him.
Yes.
For me, and especially because I covered the Giants, and I see a lot of the situation, the talking. People want to make it a Matt Jones, like this is a Matt Jones coming out party. And while I think that Matt Jones has done a great job, if you think this is anybody other than Saquon and a great bend but don't break defense, then you haven't been paying attention.
Hey, can I bust your chops and just like try to shake you out of your Monday doldrums? Since Mac Jones coaches the Patriots and Daniel Jones is the coach of the Giants.
Daniel Jones, not the coach of the quarterback.
You had about three Mac Jones references in there.
I did. And I was saying Daniel Jones for Mac Jones earlier, too. It's too many white guy Joneses. That's what it is. It's too many.
Okay.
Like how often, like Jerry Jones, Mac Jones, Daniel Jones. It's just too many white guy Joneses.
I mean, back in the day we had the Joneses. I mean, we had Casey and Sam, you know, it went the other way.
I gotta get like a Bomani Jones in there or something, you know, like keep it dynamic. Yeah. But yes, Daniel Jones. If you think that the team's winning because of Daniel Jones, then you're not watching. I think for me, what I'm really more concerned about is that because a lot of these wins aren't clean, and in the real world as a coach, I go, we'll take a win however we get it, but almost all of their wins, if not all, could have easily been losses.
Like, that makes it a better story.
It makes it a better story as someone covering the team, but as someone looking at it from a coach's perspective, I'm nervous. Like, I almost feel like I have fool's gold, because now expectations are going to come. You're 6-1. There's not going to be any more of the Giants being the underdog in every single like game they play. It's going to be the Giants being a favorite. When they lose, people are going to criticize and scrutinize, whereas going into the season, they were kind of gravy. Like, they had it set up to where, we don't have to win because nobody thinks we're going to win anyway. And then we came out and we won, you know, six out of seven.
So, yeah, I totally disagree.
You do? Why?
Yeah, I totally disagree. Because I think that other than KC and Buffalo. So other than the two dynamic teams in the National Football League, like, if the Giants play them, then obviously they're not the favorite, right? But they could virtually play – they've got a free pass this year. They can play anyone they want, and regardless of what Vegas says, they're going to be able to be those underdogs all year long. I don't care. You know, so – you know, hey, when you win, I mean, the more you win, right? It's tough to win. Sometimes we, you know, there's that little thing. Mm-hmm. That's a hint of what you're saying. Like, hey, it's easier to lose than it is to win, contrary to what, you know, right? But I'm telling you, they get a year where they can play virtually anybody except the very best, and no one's going to take them that serious. Plus, you do build up, right? When you win close games, you know this. Right, you get that confidence that you can win. It frees you up a little bit, right? So I wouldn't be surprised to see them win, you know, in a blowout one of the next couple games. That's what I expect to see. I love it when you freeze like this on me, and then I got to keep talking, looking at your frozen face, because I'm always wondering if you're just absolutely dumbfounded by what I'm saying, because it's kind of the way it comes across. So I say the Giants get a free pass and they are building confidence. They're building confidence. They're winning close games. Get into the playoffs somehow, some way, and no one expects them to win. So they can take this thing about as far as, you know, whatever their ceiling might be. In the NFC, hey, thank God they are in the NFC. That's a little more wide open than the AFC. Moving on from the Giants over really to more my bailiwick, the basketball scene. The Celtics were able to, you know, pick up another win against a very youthful and challenge, a good challenge by the Magic of Orlando, Poncho. Our Duke guy, you know who I'm talking about. Anyway, good win for the Celtics. Another loss for Gene's Lakers with Westbrook coming off the bench, which I think we discussed a little bit in episode one. Gene tends to make a fair amount of excuses for Westbrook, which is fine. I just, I don't know. I think he has a hard time fitting in on teams, seemingly. Not sure exactly why, but some of it's, I don't think, it's definitely not lack of effort, but I just think his skill set is, has a hard time translating into a team game, maybe. I don't know. But the Lakers are in trouble early. And there he is. So.
Welcome back. I don't know what
I happened. Took us over. We finished up on Jones, and I took us over to the NBA. And
it's okay. You know, we'll jump right in.
Yeah, I mean, what are your thoughts on Westbrook and you know, just what's going on? Do you think the Lakers are in trouble?
No, I don't.
Really?
I don't think you're in trouble 3 games into an 82 game season. I think this is the part, right, where as a coach, it's helped me be a more patient fan. You know what I mean? Like, just understanding that we're not even remotely close to hit the panic button time. And there's no guarantee that this roster that we're looking at is the roster that we're going to see by the time we hit the All-Star break. So would I've loved to see them not start 3-0? Obviously, yeah. I mean 0-3, like, nobody wants to see their team start 0-3. Two of the games were against two of the better teams in the league, at least we think are going to be in the better teams in the league. The third loss was against a team that's playing well. I see some stuff that I like. The Westbrook going to the bench thing to me is interesting, because I think what it has the potential to do, if Westbrook accepts it like this, is that when Westbrook comes in, it becomes a Westbrook-led team. Whereas that doesn't seem to work very well with LeBron and AD both on the court at the same time. For whatever reason, I don't think it's just as simple as, oh, well, the shooting's bad. I just think that there's just a level of flow that doesn't exist if we want to go back to, the Rise of Superman. Great book recommendation, by the way. I still appreciate that.
Glad to help you out with that one. Yep.
The inability for any of those other guys, any of those three guys, to get into that flow state, because nothing is there's no peril there because there's just other guys around. I think when Westbrook comes off the bench and it becomes the Westbrook show, you get that hard working, I can lead this band of misfit toys kind of feel that you had in Washington when he was with them, or even in OKC when he was the Lone Ranger there. But that's only going to happen if Westbrook's really willing to accept this role, which I don't know if he is or if he. Like, I don't know where he puts any of the blame on him.
Yeah. The only thing I'd say, I'm not sure, like, right, and I'm not sure, so maybe someone out there has a better handle on this, and you might know. You know, good in theory. Your thoughts that Westbrook goes out as the Lone Ranger for the second unit, and, you know, good in theory. In practice, I can't think of a superstar who, you know, has either within his own team or maybe after a trade, you know, maybe late in a career, has gone and, you know, I think people always say, yeah, this would be a great guy for the second unit. I can't think of anyone who's done that and really left a mark, but I could be dead ass wrong. Anyone come to mind?
So my problem is I've never looked at Westbrook as a superstar. And so I think that he's been bolstered by the triple doubles, you know, like I love Westbrook.
I know that, but don't you think most people would consider Russell Westbrook? I mean, again, not one of the top three, but don't you think he has superstar status in the NBA? I think he's had that. I think that's why they picked him up.
I think he has superstar status. I just don't know if he should.
Right. Okay.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, I think that's what
people
considered him at one point in time, but I never considered him a superstar. I just considered him to be like a really hard-nosed player who makes a lot of dumb decisions, right, with the ball in his hands sometimes. But I love the fact that he's always just 100 miles an hour. Interesting enough, I've got some names, but they're not superstars. I think there was a point in time when Fat Lever was averaging like 20-something a game. Mm-hmm. He went to the sixth man with the Nuggets, I believe. I'm early into my basketball, you know, knowledge there. Yeah. Is it Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf?
Yeah.
He was a killer with the ball in his hand, but he was kind of a black hole. Went to the bench where he could really kind of unlock what he does. And then more recently, Jay Crossover. Jay Crossover was, as a starter, was a perfectly good like starter who got major buckets. But when he went to the bench, he could come off as Jamal. I'm talking Jamal Crawford, by the way.
Right.
For people who don't know the nickname, when he went to the bench and came off as a sixth man, I believe he won sixth man of the year like once or twice, maybe even three times. He was a lot more lethal as a sixth man than he was as a starter, because now that second unit could be his unit. And then Lemon Pepper Lou Williams, but again, I don't know if there's anyone that has the cachet of Westbrook.
Right. But yeah, so I'm going to have to think on that one. But and does, you know, has the second unit taken the role of the sixth man largely out of the game of basketball, modern game?
I think that it has, because rarely are you seeing just the one person come in and replace. Right. You know, you're seeing a combination of guys come in and replace. But I still think that in that second unit, there's an alpha in that second unit. And that's where I think he could thrive. Like that point in time where that first moments where AD goes to the bench along with someone else, and now LeBron is there, but now he's playing off and conceding to Westbrook, or LeBron goes to the bench and AD stays out there, but now it's Westbrook with AD instead of LeBron with AD, like, and another shooter. I think that's kind of the way I look at it, kind of playing out if I was trying to make it work with Westbrook there. But I don't know. I don't know how they didn't see there being an issue when you add you know, irritants to the team.
Because you hope, right? You hope the talent,
yep,
is going to win out ultimately, and then winning cures everything. So you say, okay, whatever the irritant or whatever Westbrook's baggage of any type could be, or whatever style issues there might be trying to fit the pieces, you know, we're going to have our big three and we're going to be successful, and then they'll blossom together. You know what I'm saying? So you don't even, I think it's, yeah, I mean, I would say it's going to be cautionary to some NBA execs, though. It's going to be cautionary to, you know, how they assemble superstars.
Well, and see, I think here is the problem the NBA has now. They're paying way too many players like they're superstars.
Right.
Like, when you've got all of these players making – 200 million, 175 million, 250 million, but they're not Steph Curry, they're not LeBron James, they're not Anthony Davis, they're not Kevin Durant, Giannis. You're expecting them to play like that. If I give you 200 million, I'm not expecting Jordan Poole. I'm expecting Steph Curry. You know, it's like, so you look at a team like the Suns that just paid DeAndre Ayton, yet DeAndre Ayton has a hard time garnering more than 10 shots a game. And I just don't know how you pay somebody $180 million and allow them to shoot the ball 10 times. Like, that's going to be a problem in how these shuffles, because there's almost 100% chance that DeAndre Ayton's not going to get to the end of his contract as a Phoenix Sun. It just, law averages says that doesn't happen for teams that don't win championships. And the Suns are not going to win a championship. So, like, how does another team that wants to bring in a quality piece, they can't bring DeAndre Ayton in, because that's a superstar piece, or at least according to the money it is. And he's not playing, he's not a superstar caliber guy. So how can you justify burning that much of your cap space on a guy who's only going to be an 18 and 11 guy if ... Not a 25 and 13. He's not going to be Joel Embiid, but he's getting paid like Joel Embiid. That's a problem. And I'm all for people getting their money. So I'm not saying, hey, don't pay these guys. I'm saying that there needs to be a new dynamic structure of pay, so that the guys who really do move the needle when they step on the court are paid accordingly, and not paid with the rest of these peons over here getting the same money as them, but nowhere nearly affecting the bottom line and or the score of the game.
Yeah, well, I mean, but that's as common as, you know, the ages, right? Everyone's worked in organizations where, you know, there's people making whatever they're making, and everyone else in the organization's going, wow, that guy's or gal's making more money than I would think they ought to be making, or something like that. You know, that's kind of the way capitalism works.
No, it is. And again, I'm for it. Like, I don't want them not to get their money.
Right.
I just don't know how you navigate it when you've put a salary cap in place. Like, if this if this was the EPL and Bundesliga where there are no caps and you can just pay, then I'm like, okay, well, have three or four max guys on your team and pay that luxury and put together a legitimate super team. But in lieu of a legitimate super team, you're going to get these teams that the money says is super, but the production doesn't. I think that's where we're at in the Westbrook situation right now.
Yeah, so I do it, and say in the case of Ayton, right, because we know the Lakers, obviously, year in and year out, are contending for a championship. I mean, that's the way they're built in that market. In the case of Ayton, I say, you know what, if I'm a franchise that, you know, I want to at least be respectable, right? So only one team can win the championship. That's the reality. That's why I say, you know, most fans are spoiled and no region of the country is any more spoiled than New England. But, you know, you know, sometimes you got to be satisfied with a good team. So if I'm an exec and Ayton, it doesn't have to be Ayton, but if someone below, you know, if that's what it takes to help keep me respectable and I'm making money and I'm selling tickets and the NBA is garnering the TV money, then okay, it's not my ultimate goal. I mean, obviously I'm working to figure out how the heck I get to the very top, but it's not the worst thing in the world either. So I'll still pay out the money, maybe like you say, overpaying to some degree but he still helped me put a product on the floor that's entertaining and that I can market.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I don't know. And I don't want to bash on DeAndre Ayton because, you know, right, he hasn't done anything to me, but
I think I think DeAndre Ayton, I look at him and they're a little bit different, not as big, but I think Ayton has got to figure out the same thing Embiid does. You know, I think their teams do too. I think they just have to figure out and agree how the hell am I gonna be utilized. And then go do it, you know. I think his skill development has to increase. I think Embiid's conditioning has to get better. I think there's pieces to their games that if they can take the next step, both would be infinitely better than they are right now.
That's fair. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with like the guard play. Like we have a lot of dynamic guards playing on bad teams. Like a lot of really I guess I shouldn't say bad teams. We have a lot of dynamic guards playing on teams that aren't winning championships. What happens when those guys start Chris Pauling it? You know, when they start saying, "Hey, I don't have to be here. I can go somewhere else and, you know, really compete." I think those are the guys that are going to change the landscape. No longer is it the big moving in, you know, a trade, the dynamic guard, the Donovan Mitchells getting traded to the Cleveland Cavs, wow, instead of the New York Knicks. Like, to me, that's a dynamic that people would never think would happen. Like, how does he go to the Cavs over the Knicks? And Donovan Mitchell himself was probably sitting back going, "Cleveland? I didn't think this was going to land me in Cleveland. I thought it was going to land me in New York."
100%.
So when these guards start, you know, because you can't pay them all, at least a team can't pay them all. When these guards start popping up and they're all the prototype or the I shouldn't say prototype, but the kind of carbon copies of each other, and what you're seeing now in the league, which is that 6'3 to 6'1 blow by you, shoot deep threes, you know, ultra athletic type of guy, you know, when those guys start coming up for contracts and people start seeing it's easy to just go and grab one from anywhere, how will those things move? Like, how will those chess pieces move and reshape what the league is looking like right now?
Yeah, that's going to be interesting because then you really get into the weeds. I need to see this year unfold. But, you know, I think Steph Curry is like in a class of his own. Even he, right, need Klay Thompson. Splash Brothers needed that. They went out and got, KD. So I still question, you know, I think the NBA back in the day was built on a big, so we know it's no longer back in the day. I think it's built on more, you know, the Tatum, Brown, you know, the wings, the bigger wings today, and put KD into that category, right? So I think it, for me, it remains to be seen. I think the dynamic guard you're talking about is a piece for sure, but not a cornerstone. So I think the cornerstone is your, you know, is your Jason Tatum, KD, whoever you. That's what I think. It's yeah, no that, longer
that positionless yeah. guy.
That's right.
Yep. It'll be interesting because, like we said, it's an interesting topic because I don't know. I can't predict the future on this one. Right.
Here's one thing I do know, that on the college front, which starts in about 2 weeks, thank God, maybe a little bit less. There could be a game before that, but I know certainly by within 2 weeks.
I'm trying to make $100,000.
North Carolina is your Tar Heels are the prohibitive preseason favorites. So great run last year. I know you were pretty outspoken about it, and I'm curious how you're feeling about the Tar Heels, because I know I'm pro Tar Heels and I'm very much pro Hubert Davis.
Well, I am pro Tar Heels, so we've got that in common. I'm pro Tar Heels. All respect has to be paid to Hubert Davis and the job he was able to do in the tournament last year. It took him some time to figure it out. My question is, will the beginning of the season be a regression back to what we saw last season, which is inconsistencies? They got into the playoffs and everything got a lot more consistent. So if that's the case, then I'm more than enough man enough to come in and go, yo, you know what? I'm wrong about Hubert. He's about that life. But if it's just us, you know, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh yeah, no. I think steady as she goes. I think they're going to be the real deal. I think he's going to prove to be, you know, best man for the job.
I love some nice, you know, Roy Williams-esque 40-point blowouts. You know, to start the season. You know, the first couple of weeks, and I'll be okay with that. Like, if that's the fate of the Tar Heels, you know, couple 40-point blowouts, I'll work with it.
Yeah, well, I haven't seen their schedule, but I, you know, back in the day, obviously Georgetown made it famous, but they weren't alone. Syracuse, same thing. Most of the major schools would play, you know, 10 cupcakes before they ever played a real game. And once the tournament expanded and you know, the money became, you know, outrageously big, you know, fans got to see great matchups way earlier in the season than ever before, right? You used to have to wait till conference would start. And
let me run you down the North Carolina November games, right?
Love to hear it.
November 7th, opening night, UNC Wilmington.
Okay,
that's a my homeboy game type of thing.
Yeah, but UNCW's been pretty good in some past years, so not a cupcake.
Not a cupcake, but sweet.
Okay.
Charleston is their next game.
Not a cupcake. Competitive mid-major program.
Yep. Not a cupcake, but sweet. James Madison.
We can't quite go cupcake, but you know, we can certainly say they're trending there.
Yeah. Portland, which played well in places last year. The Pilots were better last year. And then Indiana. So they get 4 or 5 games of get your feet wet, play some decent competition. And then we're going to find out, here's your first test where you are at the end of November, November 30th.
I was dozing off. Who was the one after James Madison?
Portland.
Oh,
top Portland. Two. Yeah. And then Indiana.
Okay. So there we go.
Yeah. Indiana is at the end of November. So they've got five yeah. games that yeah. are.
Right.
Yeah. Not bad.
Yeah. Like
an emphatic 5-0, I would feel good about going into Indiana. An emphatic 5-0. Not a, you Charleston really played scrappy. Like, I feel like you got to step on the neck of a Charleston. You got to step on the neck of a Wilmington.
Where's that Indiana game being played, you know?
It's ACC Big Ten Challenge, so it's probably in Indiana.
Okay. Could be. I'll take the home team, wherever that is. But so I will say that Tar Heels will be 5-0 going into that game.
Yep. It's in Bloomington. Okay.
And more importantly, Hubert Davis will be 5-0
for the purpose of the conversation. Shout out to the brother. You know,
okay. I got you.
He can do no wrong until he can't.
That's fair. That's every coach.
Yeah. Yeah. I root for Hubert Davis to be successful because I know like what that means for the culture.
Right.
I don't know if Hubert Davis like roots for us. No, if he roots for us. We'll see.
Roots for who?
The culture. I don't know. I mean, we'll see. Because we hold you down when things get rough. We're not like out here trying to fire you.
Right.
But that's going to come.
Right.
But I think we have a responsibility. I think we have a legitimate responsibility as people of color to shed light and bring awareness to the fact that there are not a lot of people sitting in those seats that look like us. And there's right. never been someone to sit in that seat that looked like us.
Right.
And I did not, and still rubs me the wrong way, the way that he approached it when it was his time to speak about it. He brushed it off as if it wasn't a big deal. And the fact that, you know, he has he's proud of his wife and his child, who wife happens to be white and the child happens to be biracial. You know, he took the shine away. He buffed all the shine out of it. And yeah. I was just like, man, if there was an opportunity to do something right there. And make a statement that could have reverberated, especially when you think about how his season ended. You know, like the tournament run, like, boom, here we go. We should have more people in spots like this. He just never took that opportunity. And I'm like, for me, when I see that and then I see the way in which the team played all season, it gives me some pause. And it makes it harder for me to be like, okay, I'm going to rock with you. Now, I'm still going to rock because I don't know any other way, and I'm a Tar Heel fan. So at the end of the day, whoever's the coach right. is coach. But it was a swing and miss for me on that. Swing and miss.
Yeah, well, I appreciate your candor on that. And you know, it's kind of like it's similar to the critique of Jordan, right, who put Nike above all else, whereas, say, you know, Bill Russell recently with his passing has gotten a lot of tribute for, you know, his stands. And, yeah. you know, so there's a responsibility that that as a, you know, white person, you know, I would not have any, you know, I just could not appreciate the enormity of that. But I hear what you're saying, and you know, that's where individuals make choices, or maybe sometimes privately, right, in those types of positions too, privately, their feelings may not necessarily be the same ones that they put out there publicly. And some, and that is a big decision too, just on the point alone that you're making. So I hear
you. And you know what? And it's interesting because you brought up Jordan, and what we've learned about Jordan as he's become billionaire Jordan, we've learned that he's done a lot of stuff behind the scenes and has done that for years and just never wanted any credit for it. You found out posthumously about Kobe Bryant, who was doing kind of the same thing. A lot of stuff that he just didn't want his name attached to. He just wanted to do it. The problem is that doesn't inspire others.
Right.
Because the only way to inspire others is for them to see it. It's unfortunate, you know, because I'm pretty sure in both of those gentlemen's cases, they were thinking, I don't want this to be about me. I want this to be about the act, you know, and let whatever it is be whatever it is. But it almost has to be about you because you move the needle so much. Like you have such power, you have such influence that if you don't use it, you almost wasted it. Like, you know, it's almost a waste. Like, what good was it for you to be Jordan if the only thing that we got out of you publicly is a pair of sneakers? Like, and a documentary that got us through the pandemic. Thanks a lot, buddy. By the way, that documentary really was like the guiding light through the pandemic. It was like appointment viewing. Hey, I'll talk to you later. It's Tuesday. I'm gonna watch the previous show and then I'm gonna watch the new one. It was crazy. It had us going back watching the previous show before the new one came on, like it was the new one again. It was great. While we're on that, did you get a chance to see the Redeem Team doc?
No, everyone I know around me has seen it, and I have yet to view it. So I'll get on that ASAP because, yep. I mean, obviously everyone I've talked to has said it's excellent.
Next week, we'll come back, ladies and gentlemen, and we will give you our breakdown of the Redeem Team doc. I'll just tell you, it hit me right in the wheelhouse for obvious reasons. Like, that might be the collection of some of my favorite players. And I think there's an argument for them against the Dream Team. I'm going to make it next week. Yep.
Fair enough.
Well,
I'm going to say the Pats are in a rock fight tonight. Lucky to escape. And Zappy Fever is not over.
Zappy Fever is at a fever pitch because Mac Jones goes out there. I've got Daniel Jones on the brain and Mac Jones. Mac Jones goes out there and has a ho-hum game. Is that what you think?
Ho-hum performance in bad weather tonight. You know, not going to do him any favors. And you know, the ho-hum dreary performance and the feel-good last couple wins long gone. Maybe the Pats escape with a 4-point victory. And you know,
so in other words, you're saying take the under.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yep.
I like it. Take the under, ladies and gentlemen. If you're watching this tomorrow, when you can't bet on it, but just see if we're right. Actually, you know what? That's what I want y'all to do. When you listen to the podcast, you get to this point. Were we right? We say you should have taken the under in the Pats game tonight. Are we right? And if so, leave us a comment. while you're liking and subscribe to the channel. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been another episode of Zebra Stripes Podcast. I'm Coach Gene Clemens. That's Coach Witt. All the places that you can find your podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcast, Podcaster, every place that ends up having a pod place, Google Podcast, you can find us everywhere around there. Make sure you check us out. Leave a comment. What would you like to hear? What would you like to see? Where would you like to see us go? We're always looking for suggestions. Just two guys talking sports. Tend to talk a little bit more basketball because that's what we love. But we also love some other things. And it was getting into the greatest part of the year where all of the sports are converged on one. I would mention something about the Yankees, but since they didn't bother to show up, I don't feel the need to give them any more airtime than to tell them good riddance for the postseason. You should have paid Judge when you had to, and maybe we're not sitting in this situation right now.
I'm going to call the Phillies the New York Football Giants. So it's the second largest spread ever in the history of the World Series between, you know, the two championship contenders. I think 106 wins by the Astros and 86 or 7 maybe by the Phillies. So yep. I'm saying the New York Football Giants are going to take a page from the Philadelphia Phillies.
Yeah, and I think the Philadelphia Phillies are going to get smoked. This Houston team's really good. Like, we should talk about that next week. Like, yeah. It might be over by then, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, they don't need to cheat.
No, they're just really, really good, and I'm actually really rooting for Dusty Baker. Rooting for Dusty Baker to get one. Been a fan of his for a long time. Ladies and gentlemen, make sure you check us out. Like, subscribe anywhere you get your podcast from. Until next time, y'all take it easy.